Welcome to Opus here. My name is Greg Horn. We're continuing our conversation with Danny Dotson. Danny been in ministry 30 years, and yet, like so many people, just in church, man, you just get overloaded, and a lot of them are good things for God, and got a DUI, and then his dad ended his life prematurely by suicide at the age of 62, and alcohol became more of a kind of a numbing factor for Danny. And if you missed yesterday's program, it was powerful just hearing all the just battles that he had as the enemy came after him. I want to encourage you to go to our website, hopeishere.today. That's hopeishere.today, and you can listen to that 14-minute program. But, you know, Danny, you shared yesterday that unfortunately your mom, a couple years after your dad's unexpected death by suicide, you know, told you that you were the reason. And as you shared yesterday, you knew intellectually that wasn't right, but emotionally it's hard to handle. But in the meantime, you're on staff at a church that's growing and running several thousand in Arizona and gotten really promoted. But I've been in the church world 17 years, and there's a lot of great things church, but at the same time, church staffs are full of other human beings, and sometimes it can get kind of messy and painful, can it?
It does, Greg, and you know, we are human. You mentioned that, and I say so frequently, don't put me on a pedestal because I've only got one way to go. And I know that from experience, you know. Out of the 30-plus years of ministry, 24 of them were in megachurches. And God was blessing our church, and things were going well. I was executive pastor, overseeing 120-plus staff, and we were adding campuses. And, you know, you suck it up, you stuff whatever you're dealing with emotionally, and you put your game face on, you go to work every day, and you offer the grace and the mercy of God to other people, but you struggle internally to offer the grace and mercy of God to yourself. And that's what I found myself doing. I was beating myself up and you know, trying to hide, trying to offer a great game face, but inside I was dying.
Well, eventually it started to take its toll, and 2015 just started to let the alcohol numb that pain a little bit more each day, didn't you?
I did. I started to sneak around, thinking I was hiding it. You know, at first I would drive far away and go to one of the convenience stores and just thought, well, if I can just take the edge off, then I don't have to deal with the emotions, and I don't have to deal with the fear, and I don't have to deal with the pain. And, you know, people say, yeah, but when the alcohol wears off, it's still there, and that's absolutely true. So what I found was I started using alcohol more frequently. I started drinking more often, and eventually it led from something that I was doing once a month or twice a month to once or twice a week. And alcohol has one goal, and that's to destroy your life. It has one goal, and that's to see you dead. And before I knew it, I was obsessing about alcohol. I was thinking about alcohol. I was looking for every way I could get alcohol. And it got to the point where I was virtually drinking almost every day of my life.
Well, and then that started to take its toll, obviously, you know, financially and job and all that. But your health, and then finally in January of 2019, the doctor gave you, excuse the term, but some pretty sobering news, didn't he?
Yeah, sobering is it's a great term, Greg. I was in the hospital for the fifth time due to alcohol-related internal bleeding. And I had heard the doctor every time, particularly the gastroenterologist who was keeping track of what was going on inside in my esophagus and digestive tract, and even the beginnings of what was happening to my liver. And yet, even with the warnings, it didn't stop me from drinking. Greg, as I've shared with you, you know, I was thinking of ways I could take my life, ways I could end it. I didn't want to live anymore. And I didn't want to do to my family what my father had done, in the sense of just ending it all. And I couldn't find the courage to do it. I had the means. You know, I had the weapon. I had the thoughts and the plans and the ways I could make it happen to make it even look like it wasn't a suicide. I had those things all in my head, but I never could get the guts to do it. And I backed out every time until I finally came to the conclusion that the way to end it all was to drink myself to death. That was the goal of alcohol, and I'd let it take its toll. And February of 2019, my fifth time in the hospital, the gastroenterologist, after checking me all out, comes in and says to me in front of my kids and one of my closest friends, my sister, he said, "Danny, I got the bleeding stopped this time. But if you wind up back in here bleeding in the esophagus again, I have nothing left in the esophagus to work with, and you'll bleed to death and you'll die." And that was a real sobering moment. You know, for the first time in I don't know how long, Greg, I looked at the prospect of two things. One, that I had wanted to die and I was succeeding at it. Or two, did I really want to live? And as I looked at my kids, I looked at my sister, my friends, I realized that I did want to live, and I wanted to fight, and I didn't want to put them through what had happened with my father. And so I determined on the 22nd of February, 2019, that I would surrender and ask for help. And that's the hardest thing I've ever done that day. But I'll have to say it's also the bravest thing I've ever done, was to say, "I can't do it, and I need somebody to help me."
Danny, how old were you when you had to make this decision?
That decision, I was 58 years old.
And the reason I wanted to ask that is because I know there's people listening and just thinking, you know, there's not hope, I can't change, and, you know, God can't do anything. And yet, you know, you were part of, you know, mega churches, staffs, and led staff over 1,000 people, and yet, you know, the enemy tried to do what John 10:10 said, to steal and kill and destroy. But you finally said, "Okay, I need help." And I know there's somebody listening today, and they're thinking, "Man, I need to do that." What would you say to that person that, you know, they're in their late 50s and yet they're hanging on by a thread? What would you say to them, Danny?
Yeah, I get help, and don't be afraid to ask. As I said, the bravest thing you can do right now is to say, "I can't do this by myself, and I need help," and surrender it. And it is in surrender, particularly if you have a faith in God and you follow Jesus Christ, it is in surrender that life can begin to turn around. And Greg, as I've said so often, it is when you surrender and when you admit that your life is a mess and you can't do anything about it, that Jesus goes, "Hey, that's right where I want you. And now we can begin to do something. Now we can begin to work."
I heard a guy say one time, he was talking about, you know, he said, a lot of us come to church and we've got one knee down, but until we put the other knee down and fully surrender that God can't really do the full work. And it sounds like you found that to be true in your life last February 22nd, 2019.
I did. And the greatest thing I ever did was to say that I need help. I was raised in a family where you didn't ask for help, Greg. You did it on your own. You pulled yourself up by your own bootstraps, and no matter what it was, you didn't ask anybody to help you. And I lived with that, and I fought that. But I got to a place where my best effort, the best plans that I had, the best work that I had done, got me in a hospital for the fifth time with no hope if I came back again. And at that point, I threw up the white flag and said, can somebody please help me deal with this issue of alcoholism in my life?
Well, we are so glad that you did. Let me ask you this question. How prevalent and widespread is the issue of alcoholism, and who is at risk, Danny?
You know, Greg, that's such a good question today because it is so widespread. And you began, the show yesterday by saying how it's glamorized in our society. It's shown as the way you celebrate. It's a part of every sporting event and everything that appears to be glamorous and successful in life. And the reality is that drinking deaths are on the rise. Deaths from cirrhosis, alcohol-related cirrhosis, rose over the last 10 years 76% in the ages of people 25 to 34. We're not talking, Greg, about the old scraggly-haired man in a trench coat living under a bridge with a brown paper bag. We're talking about people in the prime of their life, 25 to 34, who are all of a sudden finding out that they've got cirrhosis of the liver and they're going to die. They're going to need a transplant. That they're possibly jeopardizing their health and their life. The alcohol deaths among 18 to 34-year-olds rose 69% between 2007 and 2017. 69%, 18 to 34-year-olds. Greg, we have more people who die because of alcohol than the whole opioid epidemic combined. And yet, we talk about the opioid issue, at least we've begun to, but alcohol continues to be glamorized. It continues to be so readily available, and it's killing us. And major alcohol-related deaths at this point are a huge epidemic in Western civilization.
Let me ask you this, Danny. How is the family affected? You know, we see obviously what happened in your case and, you know, what happened to you individually about took your life. You know, your esophagus was shredded. But talk about the effect it has on family.
Yeah, for me, I'm married fairly young. I married a gal, as you said. I went to Cincinnati Bible College. I married a gal who went to Bible College to marry a preacher. And, you know, we came out and thought we would tackle the world for God, and she's been my best friend, but it got to the point, Greg, I thought I was hiding it, and I wasn't. She couldn't trust me anymore. She knew I was lying to her. She knew I was sneaking off. And 19 months, we were separated. She said, I can't do it anymore. Thank God that she found a group of people in a support group that rallied around her that she could go seek help and have people who said, I understand. My daughter, my oldest child, is still struggling today with anger with me, even though I've not picked up a drink in over a year. You know, I've broken such trust and I've disappointed her in so many ways. She saw me and I know had to be ashamed of things I was saying and I was doing and, you know, where I blacked out and having to come get me. And, to this day, she struggles with anger. And my son, he's been there. He's been supportive.
Hey, Danny, I hate to cut you off, man, but we are out of time today. But I want you to join us tomorrow. We're going to hear about what Danny Dotson has learned through this alcoholism. He's on the healing side now. But make sure you join us again tomorrow as we continue our conversation with Danny Dotson on Hope is Here.
CMI is your full-service human resources provider in Central Kentucky. For 15 years, CMI Human Resources has taken great pride in helping organizations and people work. Whether it's employee handbooks or help in filling a position, no job is too large or too small for CMI. Contact the professionals today at CMI Human Resources, 859-296-2800 or online at cmiconsulting.com.